Hello and welcome to the Brutal Iron Gym Podcast, where our goal is to cut through the BS and deliver the brutal truth about topics related to health and happiness. Today's podcast is number 1191. The topic is Q&A and the title is Nutrient Timing Effects on Performance. Cool. So this topic is kind of brought up by a listener question, so I want to address their question but also give information that's kind of universally applicable. So we'll start with that. I'll read through the question, we'll get into this, and we'll have some fun. The person writes, I have a question I'm hoping you can help with. Me too. My kids play indoor track here in New York. They will not allow these athletes to eat during the meets or on the bus, etc. So the kids have like a 6-hour period of not eating. I would like to address this as an issue of performance due to lack of energy sources. Would you agree with this? And could you possibly give some intelligent facts that I can bring to the athletic board? Now, I'll answer everything in the podcast in kind of a general format, and then I will send this person some more specific information. But this is a good point to bring up, is with, I'm assuming that the limitation to nutrition is due to COVID. People, you know, keep eating with their masks down, what's the point of, you know, if they're eating with the mask down and they're all within close contact to each other, they're definitely going to have some kind of issues. So I'm assuming the school board is saying, you know, we don't want to have those issues. We don't want to put the kids at risk. So we're just going to say no food, and therefore it lessens the risk that masks are down. So I understand it. Now, if we look at a performance factor, is limiting nutrition up to 6 hours before their activity best for performance? Hell no. So it's kind of like the athletic board would be stuck in, you know, between a rock and a hard place. There's not going to be a great answer for them. So let's talk through just kind of a little bit of the timing effects so we can understand that a little bit. And then kind of, you know, we'll leave the decision up to the athletic board, and I'll give this parent some information that they can argue their case, and we'll see kind of how things go from there for them. Now, one of the things I just thought of is in trying to describe what it feels like and what the effects of nutrient timing on performance is. I don't know how many of you, but I'm assuming a good portion of you, have had to do some kind of workout or some kind of activity in the morning before you ate. Now, what you will find is if I go for a run in the morning or if I try to work out in the morning, and let's imagine that this is going to sound, you know, crazy, but let's imagine that we did that without caffeine. Now, I'm sure all of you went, oh my gosh, I'd never do that, or oh, that'd be miserable. But to work out in the morning or to go for a run in the morning without caffeine, and this also implies, since we're waking up in the morning, that we're doing it without food. You probably have slept at least 6 hours. So this would be the equivalent of these students having to do an activity after 6 hours of not having to eat. And so this is kind of like kind of putting us in that parameters, in that kind of situation, but in a more common way would be is that we wake up out of bed, we've been fasting for 6 to 8 hours because we were sleeping, and we want to hurry up and be active. That is going to be miserable. You're often going to feel very sluggish to start. You're going to need like kind of a longer warm-up than normal. You might not feel like that runner's high or that workout high until later than normal. So it might take 40 minutes to feel good, whereas usually you're maybe flying and ready to go in 5 or 10 minutes. There's going to be a sluggish feeling. Then, what you don't feel, but what is true, is that when you exercise in a fasted state, meaning you're not fueled by recent nutrition, it increases cortisol production, which is a stress hormone. You'll actually produce more cortisol compared to a workout that is nutritionally supported. This is interesting because increasing cortisol, in a sense, it has a greater negative impact on the central nervous system, and it'll take longer to recover from that exercise bout. So if I ran or I worked out for an hour without any food ahead of time, I'm going to produce more cortisol, more stress. I'm going to feel more stress. My body's going to take longer to recover from that than if I was properly fueled with nutrition. Also, because we have increased cortisol production, it messes up with sleep quality. Your sleep cycle will be more negatively impacted from a fasted workout than a non-fasted workout. And it increases anxiety, which is something that a lot of people, if they're new to anxiety or they don't know that they actually have anxiety, you might not be aware of that. But doing fasted workouts actually increases anxiety compared to nutritionally fueled workouts. really interesting things here. Now, the reason why people don't commonly know this or notice this is they mask the low energy and that sluggish feeling with caffeine. They take, you know, some kind of pre-workout, they drink coffee, something with caffeine in it. And that caffeine gives you that kind of false sense of energy. It's false in the sense that there's no calories there. It's just your body's going to burn on the caffeine. It's going to run on the caffeine. The downside is all those negative impacts are still there, but they're actually heightened now. So if you do caffeine-fueled fasted workouts, you're still going to have the increase of cortisol, stress hormone, compared to a nutritionally supported workout. But the caffeine actually furthers the worsening of sleep cycles and sleep quality, and it furthers the worsening of anxiety. But the performance is improved. So if I take caffeine now and I'm fasted, I don't notice it, the negative impact of the fasting, because my performance is enhanced by the caffeine. So we get an immediate effect that kind of hides the fact that we're fasted. But the negative impacts are all delayed, so we don't tend to recognize those. You know, if I wake up in the morning, I drink a bunch of caffeine, I do a hardcore workout, and then like throughout the rest of the day, I'm eating okay, and I feel a little tired here and there, but then at night, I fall asleep really fast, but then I'm wide awake in the middle of the night, they're not going to recognize that that sleep that night was an impact from what they did that morning. They think, oh, I might be more stressed, or, you know, I don't even know why it's happening. The negative effects are all delayed, so we don't notice that they're connected to that immediate effect of the caffeine and the fasted workout. Now, we talk about this a little bit deeper in depth in podcast number 614, which is a nutrition podcast titled The Effects of Caffeine-Fueled Fasted Workouts. So really cool podcast to check out if you want to do that, kind of deeper dive into that. Now, to correct these negatives and to improve performance, it's recommended that you would eat calories prior to exercise. Fasted exercise is never going to be as good of performance as exercise that is fueled and supported nutritionally. The exact source of what you should eat kind of depends on the timing prior to when you're active, hence the title Nutrient Timing Effects on Performance. So what I eat to support my performance would differ depending on when I'm eating. And the reason why is it has to do with digestion. Some foods digest faster than other foods. If I want the energy from that food, say in 10 minutes, I need to eat something that's digested and readily available in 10 minutes. But if I want the energy in 90 minutes, maybe I'm eating an hour and a half before my workout. That's a whole different set of foods, because what digests in 10 minutes would be gone by the time 90 minutes came around. So the importance of why it matters what you eat is, when is it going to be available? If I eat something, say I drink sugar, like a Gatorade, that's readily available almost instantly because we start digesting sugars through our cheek linings. So we get it almost immediately. That means it's available immediately. But if I drink a Gatorade now, then I go try to work out in 2 hours, there's nothing left of that Gatorade in 2 hours. It has gone through my bloodstream. My body has done what it needed to do with it. It got rid of whatever would have been excess. It's all gone. It's used up. So by drinking a Gatorade now, it might help me a little bit with hydration factor by the time 90 minutes rolls around, but I'm not going to have any energy from that sports drink 90 minutes later. So what I typically do with like clients when I work with them, and I'm giving like a typical example to some of my nutrition-based clients, is I'll read through what I send them. So it says, before workouts, focus on carbohydrates as the main source of energy of the meal. This will provide your body with readily available energy that can be easily used to fuel the energy demands of the workout. Typically, an appropriate amount would be 30 to 80 grams of carbs. It's a huge window, but it has to do with the person's size, muscle mass, and all these things, and the type of exercise they're doing. So with the clients we do, I do like eventually teach them what's the right amount for them and how to kind of identify based on what they're about to do. Whether they're about to do just 10 minutes of light cardio, or if they're going to do an hour of heavy weight training, or if they're going to do sprint intervals up hills, there's different kind of demands. The specific type of carbs depends on the timing before the workout. So, for example, if you're consuming the carbs at 10 minutes or less before the workout, you should focus on liquid sugars. That's sports drinks, fruit juice, iced tea, things that are just liquid sugar. That's it. It's the fastest thing you can get into. Now, if your timing is, say, 10 to 20 minutes before the workout, you can focus on sugars, whether they're liquid or solid. So some people, for example, eat gummy bears or candy, or fruit. And that would work if you give it a little bit extra time, say the 10 to 20 minute mark. So if I'm going to work out in 15 minutes, I can eat some gummy bears. I can eat an apple or a banana, and it'll be kind of sort of available while I'm working out. But 20 minutes to 90 minutes beforehand, it's a big window, but 20 minutes to 90 minutes before the workout, I want to focus on solid foods, very, very lean, no fat, as minimal dietary fat as possible. And you would want to focus on kind of like refined carbs, but solid food carbs, which would be white bread, white bagel, pasta, potatoes, rice, tortilla wrap. Now, the amount that you can consume is kind of sort of individual basis. The further away from the workout, the more you can eat. The closer to the workout, the less you should eat. And then greater than 90 minutes away from the workout, they should absolutely focus on solid foods, but it should be more kind of a little less refined, meaning like a wheat bagel or wheat bread or wheat pasta, maybe a sweet potato rather than a white potato, maybe brown rice rather than white rice. So when you get further and further away from the workout, you want slower and slower digesting food, so it's not digested and available until the workout time comes. So I don't want to eat something at 90 minutes that is available in 5 minutes. I want to eat something 90 minutes ahead of the workout that's available in 90 minutes. I want it to time out. So notice that the example of the furthest time frame I give to the clients away from their workout is 90 minutes. That's an hour and a half. The end of that range, how far I would say is, okay, well, if I eat maybe 2 hours before the workout, is that okay? Or 3 hours, is that okay? Or 4 hours, is that okay? Typically what I'd say to them is the closest meal you can have to the workout that'll matter is probably 3 hours. And kind of the worst case scenario, and maybe sort of it'll be helpful, is 4 to 5 hours away. Why? Is that anything eaten 5 hours or more away from the activity, no matter what it is probably already digested, used, and gone by the time the workout comes. Now, there are foods that take longer than 5 hours to digest, but they're not going to be great bursts of energy. So if I eat a steak, 8 hours before the workout, is there some protein and fats still digesting at that time? Probably sure, depending on the fattiness of the steak. But is that going to be a big burst and big supply of energy? Hell no. You're almost going to not notice it. Really, anything you want to contribute to the workout has to be digesting at the time of the workout. It has to be available. Otherwise, you're running off of just natural reserves. So stored carbohydrates in the muscles, body fat. That's not fresh and new energy, readily available energy. It's energy that the body has to go look for, go find, go break down, and go do a process to make it available. So if we look back at the listener's question, if the students are not permitted to consume anything greater than 4 to 5 hours ahead of the activity, then yes, it would negatively impact their performance in that they would not have readily available energy. It would be like if we woke up in the morning and tried to work out. We're not going to feel amazing. So they will have to use reserves, which is stored carbohydrates in the muscles in the form of glycogen and the breakdown of body fat, depending on the type of activity that they're doing. The availability of reserves is delayed. The body is slow to break down body fat, and it's faster, much faster, to give glycogen as an energy source, but it's still less delayed than it being already in your bloodstream. And it's lessened in the amount compared to if the food was currently digesting. Our body is cheap. It will not give you any more than it believes you minimally need. So if I drink a bunch of Gatorade now, I can use as much of that as I want because it's all fresh right in my system. If I'm trying to pull from glycogen, pull from body fat, my body's only going to give and kind of use the minimal amount. So if we're pulling from reserves, yes, there is energy available in reserve. But it's not like a hyper amount. It's not a large amount. It is a slower release. So if within this window, they have their performance. Say, for example, they perform 3 to 5 hours after the last meal. So it's 6 hours maybe in total that they can't eat, but maybe they're actually doing the activity in the middle of that time. So if you count like a bus ride there, they do the activity, then a bus ride home, they're not doing the activity at the extended end of the 6 hours. They're doing their activity somewhere in the middle, probably somewhere within a 3 to 5 hour mark. If that's true, then eating the appropriate food sources, meaning slow digestible carbs, and even with some types of fats in there to make it really digest long enough, they'll be okay. It's not optimal, but they'll be okay. But if their last meal was over 5 hours before the performance, then yes, the performance is really going to start to be limited more and more as time goes by. So what I'd suggest, and now I don't know the rules against liquids, but I'm assuming it's the same as food, as they don't want the mass coming down, is to eat a meal of complex carbohydrates and let it be okay that there's like some fats in there. You don't have to seek out fat sources, but it's okay if the carbs have, you know, 2 or 3 grams of fats in them. That's fine. But focus on complex carbohydrates about 3 hours ahead of the estimated activity time. So say they're leaving the house at 12, you believe they're going to be running around 2 or 3, they should eat their meal like 11 to 11:30, kind of right before they leave the house. You would focus on solid carbohydrate food sources and non-refined sources. So you want wheat bread, wheat bagel, wheat pasta, you know, sweet potato, brown rice, tortilla wrap. You want to have carbohydrates that are slow digesting. They might feel kind of full at first, but they'll have 2 or 3 hours to digest that food. So they should focus on slow digesting foods, estimated around 3 hours before when they're going to be active. And then hydrate as much as you can from there. If they're allowed to drink, have them drink Gatorade as they get closer and closer to the workout or to the activity. If they're not allowed to drink, that's unfortunate and a bummer because they're going to show up probably dehydrated to some level, and dehydration does decrease performance. So I'm assuming that the athletic board is in kind of like a damned if you do and damned if you don't situation, whereas if they have no restrictions whatsoever, no kid will have a mask on their face. They'll be eating food, drinking, and just talking to each other, you know, 2 feet apart, just breathing in each other's faces. So the athletic board then might have to say, okay, well, we can't allow food, we can't allow liquid, that way the mask get to stay on. And is that best for performance? No. So that's the trade-off they're having to pick. You know, far be it for me to say which one's the best, I'll just let everybody else decide that. but this is some of the science, this is some of the thought process behind what can we do to work within that limitation. We understand that, yes, it does impact performance, but we understand that there's a reason why they want that parameter. What can we do to kind of get the best of performance while understanding that parameter? Is eat a complex carbohydrates, eat a good-sized meal about 3 hours ahead of the estimated activity time. If you focus on complex carbohydrates, bagels, breads, pastas, potatoes, rice, tortilla wraps, things like that, then the kids will have something available to them by the time they're exercising and doing their sports or whatever, and they're going to feel at least better than if they ate nothing or if they ate the wrong things. If they ate a bunch of sugary stuff, by 3 hours it's all gone. So hopefully this gives you something that you can feel proactive to do. And for everybody who's not in that exact situation, this is still very helpful to understand that timing component. Let's say that you get off work and you're driving to the gym. Maybe you have less than 10 minutes. Gatorade, fruit drink, iced tea, just liquid sugars. Maybe you have a little bit of a longer commute, say 20 minutes. Well, you can do more solid things. You can do a piece of fruit rather than fruit juice. You can do some candy if you want. Maybe you get out of work and you want to work out an hour later, or you work out in the middle of the day. What should you eat the breakfast beforehand? Those kind of things. Then we want to focus on solid foods. If you're eating something 20 to 90 minutes before the workout, focus on solid carbohydrates, but very refined carbohydrates. White bread, white bagel, white pasta, white potato, white rice. Then if you're greater than 90 minutes away from your workout, focus on complex foods. Wheat bagel, wheat bread, wheat pasta, wheat potato, which would be sweet potato is a slower one, rice, things like that. So hopefully this was helpful. Kind of neat to see kind of the reasoning and thought process behind how it's all put together. But if anybody has any questions about this, just email me at brutalironjim@gmail.com. I appreciate you listening to the podcast, and I want to make sure that you know I'm always available to help. If you like today's podcast or the podcast in general, please share the podcast. You can do so by sharing a link on social media. That's the best way to reach the most amount of people. You can also do email, text message, or just a conversation with a friend. I appreciate that if you let people know about the podcast, that it can help them. And that's the true goal of the podcast, is the more people we reach, the more people we can help. Thank you to the patrons of the podcast, the people who financially support the podcast through the Podbean platform and through the podcast donation link accessible on our Instagram homepage. The podcast is well over $1,000 a year, so I really appreciate the financial help. It's only through the help of the patrons that I'm able to do this every single day. So thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Also, if you like the information we share on our podcast, you can find more from us on our social media channels on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube under the name Brutal Iron Gym. If you have any questions, feedback, suggestions, anything that you want to know, let us know in our email, brutalirongym@gmail.com. As always, I hope this was helpful, and thank you for listening.